We're going to come back in a moment as we talk about North Korea, the kill shot, Comet Ison, with Major Ed Dames. They call him Dr. Doom. Find out why. And of course, foremost remote viewer and a teacher, Major Ed Dames, U.S. Army retired, decorated military intelligence officer, one of the original members of the U.S. Army prototype remote viewing training program as well. He served as the training and operations officer for the Defense Intelligence Agency's Psychic Intelligence Collection Unit, currently serving as the executive director for the Matrix Intelligence Agency, which is a private consulting group. His website, learnrb.com. Major Ed Dames, Dr. Doom, back on Coast to Coast. Ed, how are you?
I'm pretty good. And yourself, George?
Good. I'm doing well. It's good to have you here during some incredibly tense times, Ed. I mean, it seems...
Before we get into that doom and gloom stuff, I just wanted to say that was a great presentation by Dr. Greer. I was one of his first insiders in 1992, just prior to his formation of the Disclosure Project. So we sat down together in private in Atlanta, and I dumped all my UFO stuff on him.
Super. Yeah, he is good. He's very meticulous. He reminds me of you when it comes down to facts and data and everything else.
Actually, he does remind me of me.
He really does. So
what we'll do, I'll assign a team, a professional team, and we'll take a look at that object. You notice that I call it an
object. Okay, let's do that, and let's compare it to what they study. What's new with you?
Just a lot of stuff, George, a lot of...
I don't know why I always ask you that, because you never tell me.
Well, I have some private projects in addition to the Matrix Intelligence Agency work. I have some hobbies and projects. My hobbies have always been the same: missing children and child murderers and those kind of things. So I'm in the field a lot on that, on my hobbies.
Well, you help a lot of people doing that, that's for sure. And that's so important. And I want to talk with you about a number of different things. Let's talk about, if we can, first and foremost, North Korea. You've talked about North Korea on this program before. They continue to rattle their saber sword. They are a little quiet this week, but who knows what will happen next week. What do you see there?
We see details that, to elaborate upon what we saw 16 years ago and announced on Coast to Coast 16 years ago or more, that the next use of an atomic weapon in anger will be on the Korean Peninsula by the North Koreans, and that we stated that, and we've been stating that, as you know, over the years. Well, we've got a lot more details now, and some I don't even think the Department of Defense has yet, although I'll fix that for them. As you know, they have said they abrogated their participation in the armistice, so mm-hmm. they're back in the state of war. And they're being pushed pretty hard by new, because of their last space shot. They put a satellite. They successfully put a satellite in orbit, although it's not oriented the right way. But they'll get it right next time. Those attempts to develop an intercontinental ballistic missile are not going to stop. They are not going to stop. They will keep doing it in spite of what anybody does, in spite of any more constraints that the UN Security Council puts on them. But keep in mind that their Nodong missile, which is tried and tested, their medium-range missile, which has a range of 800 miles, that can be fitted with a nuclear warhead, albeit a small one, the 7 megatons, but that puts it within range of a whole bunch of stuff owned by the U.S., Japan, and the South Koreans. However, what the U.S. government doesn't know, or we uncovered, my agency uncovered, is the following, their real plan. They know that it's going to take years to develop a successful ICBM, and a long time. And they may not have years before NATO or the U.N. attempts to impose democracy upon North Korea.
Good point.
And so they have a plan, and the plan is very, very devious, but very excellent. It's diabolical, but excellent. They've developed nuclear mines. Actually, we thought they were mines, but they are not mines. They're actual devices that will be transported via submarine to far distant places like Pearl Harbor, possibly Long Beach, places like that, and they'll be set off in those places. And that's how they'll get there. And that's what the plans are right now. And those devices are already have been developed. They're ready.
Are they nukes? Nukes or dirty bombs?
You bet. No, they're nukes. They're nukes. And we thought they were mines, but we were wrong. They're actually nukes to be emplaced right off the coast, right outside the harbors or as close as they can get to U.S. territories if we attack North Korea. And my government does not know that yet. I have to fill in the details.
Well, is this guy Kim Jong-un, is he dumb enough to launch?
He's not in charge. He's just a
puppet. He's a puppet, isn't he?
He's just a patsy. Yeah. We're not really sure. Of course, my agency can find out, but our priorities are higher. But there's good evidence that his aunt, who's a four-star general, is running the country, and he's just being groomed for some as a future patsy.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
Now, do you see that as a tinderbox, though, Ed? Is something going to happen?
I think yes. I don't think there's going to be a real long duration war on the Korean Peninsula because of the Chinese involvement there. The Chinese are antsy. In fact, they've got troops lined up along the Sheraton Mutual border because they don't want a war. All the refugees that would flood their country is something that they cannot deal with right now. Their economy is on the ropes as well as everybody else's. So the Chinese are not going to permit a full blown war on that peninsula. But I think there will be some incidents there. However, there's going to be incidents all over Asia, all over the Pacific, the Chinese and Japanese and Taiwanese and the mainlanders. Right now, the whole world's a powder keg.
And the reason the Chinese have lined up their troops to keep the North Koreans from scattering into China?
No, correct, because if there is a war, there'd be so many refugees.
Yeah.
And China is economically pressed right now, so that's not something they want, and they are providing assistance still. Even though they just sat down for talks. Now, North Korea said they're not going to sit down with six-party talks anymore because they feel humiliated, especially since the U.S. is sitting at the table there dictating terms. They're not going to do that. They're way too proud.
Are you concerned about North Korea?
No, I'm concerned about something that far bigger that will eclipse that, and it's the proverbial kill shot. I think 2013 is the year it's a hot time in the old town tonight. The reason I'm saying that is over the years, 15 years ago when I predicted this global economic collapse, one thing that we saw, we were wondering when this would happen, and all the research that went into trying to determine when this global economic collapse would occur, concomitant with the collapse, I'm not saying before or after, on the cusp of, is a global pandemic. And now we're looking at the H7N9 virus.
Virus where they've got like 120 cases, but 22 deaths already.
That's the one. That's the one that we're looking at right now. In fact, we're studying it, and we're saying that this really fits, that it just really fits as a candidate for what we're seeing. And this large passing space body. If all the people who have not seen my Killshot DVDs, and it's free. They can go to thekillshot.com and get it still. In that, you'll see I mention a large passing space body is either initiates these solar flares, the sequence of very large solar flares, or is concomitant with it, attendant with it. We think that the ISON group that discovered this very large comet, we think that ISON comet is the best candidate. All these things are fitting like pieces of a puzzle. So that's why I'm putting my stuff on the line now, because you know that remote viewing is outside of time. That's why we have to work so hard to establish dates. But I'm saying 2013 and early 2014 is when it starts. So all that, I believe, will eclipse all these wars and rumors of war.
Well, this comet that is out there, Comet ISON, right? That could be a candidate here?
Well, that group, actually, it's a group that discovered it, and it was two men in the group, one from Belarus, one a Russian. And we're saying that the comet that they discovered is very large. It's going to pass it's a sun grazer. It's going to be a sun grazer, and it's going to dump dust on Earth, coming and going in 2014, early 2014. People can check this out on the Internet themselves. We're saying that plus these two other events that presage, they're not precursors of, but they presage the kill shot, it's all so close together that, and because that large passing space body is the thing that triggers or is concurrent with the initiation of all these huge solar flares. We're saying that and that comet passes by in the late in winter, late fall and winter this year. That's when it starts. That's when we're saying it. All the stuff really starts. Now we may have some very large solar flares before that, but we're saying when that comet passes through this neck of the woods, that's when the stuff really hits the fan.
Well, that's a good point too. And when it does hit, it's going to hit in a very, very big way. Now, explain what you mean by the kill shot, because to me, that sounds like everybody's wiped out.
Yeah, it was probably long ago. It was probably a bad choice of words, but I used it. Because on Coast to Coast, I said, "Here comes the shot across the bow of the largest solar," and 2 weeks later, the largest solar flare in history popped up in 2003. And then I told Art Bell that that's not the kill shot, and that term stuck. The kill shot, and all this is explained on the DVD. Folks can see this. When this large passing space body comes by, the sun begins to produce massive solar flares, not just one. So, and it does not take out all life on Earth. It begins to turn Earth into a radiation rotisserie, upper atmosphere, not only just the upper atmosphere, but and I've talked about this on your show many, many times. So that what happens is, and I'm putting together we're doing a lot of work on death zones, I call them, in-house. But the impact areas for when this starts in 2013, 2014, where are all these deaths going to occur and by what means? Most of the deaths will be starvation because water is going to dry up. The heat will go up intensely in many parts of the world, not all over at once. So over the years, I've done a lot of private contract work for sanctuary areas, where the best survival areas will be for people. I go into their I use remote viewing for them personally. And by the antithesis of that, we're looking at where folks aren't going. For instance, I was wondering for many years why parts of British Columbia that fit as far as we're concerned, looking at hundreds and hundreds of these personal sanctuary locations, why there weren't a lot of sanctuary locations in British Columbia. Because, not near the coast, inland, because it's perfect. It's got a lot of fish, a lot of fresh water, not large population densities, educated population, blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that these sanctuary locations are not just sanctuaries from kill shot effects, personal sanctuary locations, but also from Fukushima. And the radiation from Fukushima, because that plume is coming down on British Columbia, repeated nonstop. This is not like Chernobyl where you cap it. No, this is a constant plume of radiation, and it just like the radiation from Chernobyl. I used to live right next to Chernobyl for many years. That plume came down. Belarus took it hard. Belarus took it tough. But Sweden. Children had thousands of cases of thyroid cancer because the plume was carried that way. So these sanctuary locations are also sanctuaries from all the reactors that will break and discharge radiation into both the sea and the air, plumes underwater, plumes in the air. So what we're trying to do now is look at the most dangerous areas on the planet and trying to put together some matrix to determine what people should do. And I'll pass that out. That'll be ready, but I'm going to do two terminal speaking events in Orlando and Reno in the fall. These are closed doors, and I'll tell you why in a minute, but I'll pass out those maps at those events. I have to do the events because there's so many things I cannot say in the public, in particularly in media like this, that are very sensitive, not just politically incorrect, but extremely sensitive, extremely important things that people need to hear about their government, about economic survival as well as regular survival. I can't do it on the air, George, so I've got to do it behind closed doors, and then people must sign a non-disclosure agreement if they come to those two speaking events.
How come? Why?
Because I'm walking the edge. I'm walking the edge. Remember?
You're laying it out this time.
I'm sorry?
You're going to lay it all out this time.
I did that once earlier this year, and I got to do it. I'm going to do it two more times. And also, by that time, things will have changed so much globally that we'll have new information to put out on the streets. But again, a lot of this is quasi-classified. It's very sensitive, and I'll get you and me in trouble by talking just about a little bit of it.
Would it cause a panic?
Part of it probably would, George. Yeah, probably would. That's why I sit down behind closed doors with folks and systematically go over the stuff that they need to know, that some of them suspect, conspiracy theories otherwise, but are important for them and their families and my family. Even Dr. Doom is beginning to get scared now.
Even Dr. Doom is starting to mellow a little bit, huh?
Yeah, and getting scared. When Dr. Doom gets scared, that should be a red flag to a lot of folks.
A lot of people led, and I think it may have led up to these Boston bombings, but a lot of people have been feeling uneasy, very tense. Do you feel that with remote viewing? Can you feel emotion at all with that?
Well, when we go through our protocols, as you might know, it takes about 10 minutes to get to the stage where we have to be able to discern our own emotions vis-a-vis our target. If our target's an inanimate object, we don't have any emotions that we have to objectify. But if it's something like a bomb blast or whatever, then we have to be able to not only discharge our own what we call aesthetic impact, we have to be able to discharge that, but we have to be able to recognize it in distinctively and succinctly and get it down on paper and move on, because it's part of the description of the target. And yes, we do have reactions. When I look for missing children who are mostly dead, I have to break away sometimes because I cry. I come back in 5 minutes and work, but you know it's a heavy duty thing. When we looked at as a military unit, when I was operations officer for the military remote viewing unit, the Lockerbie bombing.
Sure.
We're looking in the aircraft for a whole bunch of people being blown up at once, and that's heavy impact stuff. So yeah, you've got to you have to deal with it, and we do.
Ed. We're going to get into some various aspects of your remote viewing abilities and see what else you see here. But the Hopis called it the Blue Star. Revelation
Blue Star
calls it Wormwood. Are we
Blue
talking
Star
about
Casina?
Yeah. Are we talking about the same thing here?
I think so. That's my surmise.
Hmm.
Yeah. When you see the Blue Star Casina dancing in the plaza. Or a dancer takes his mask off, then it begins.
Is there any way around it? I mean, can we control it? Do we change? Do we have the ability to change anything?
No, we don't. I think in advanced worlds, probably in other parts of other parts unknown, I think if people are coherent, and consciousness is very, very powerful, and I think that. En masse, then I believe it could be controlled, but certainly not here where we're the collective consciousness itself, not to mention collective unconscious, is chaos. And so we don't have the coherence to be able. Yes, mind over matter is possible. Psychokinesis is possible. And en masse, mountains can be moved, but not down here. No, sir.
No, not at all.
There's one thing that's very, very important that I want to make sure that I get across to your listeners about this H7N9 virus, this pandemic, and it may mutate too. But it doesn't matter because there's a home remedy that works, George, and it can save lives. So may I talk about that?
Yeah, let's do that when we come right back after the break, Ed, okay?
Okay.
Major Ed Dames, our special guest here on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with Ed. His website, learnrv.com. Also, great DVD out there, by the way, if you're interested in learning about remote viewing. It's called Learn Remote Viewing, the DVD set. Simple as that. In terms of contact, if you need to contact me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. Coasttocoastam.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter as well by simply going to our website. I'm going to come back in a moment. We'll continue talking with Major Ed Dames, the remote viewer. Let's get into this H7N9 pandemic. Was it developed in a lab? Let's see what Ed has to say when we come right back. Well, next hour, we'll take your calls with Major Ed Dames. We'll come back with him in a moment, talk more about remote viewing, what he sees. Have you had a chance to see our television program, Beyond Belief? You can. You get it for 10 days free. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com. At the top, you click hosts, and then TV opens up, and click that. Fill out the information. Also, take advantage and look at all the specialized videos that you can also look there for free. 10 days free. Just have some fun with it. And welcome back to Coast, Major Ed Dames with us. Ed, so there is this flu out there called the bird flu, H7N9. It's pretty deadly. I mean, it's got a 20% death rate out there in China.
And even scarier, it's an influenza A type of virus. And even scarier is science. The medical community does not know how it's being transmitted. In fact, there was one case of a typhoid Mary, where a woman, a virtual typhoid Mary, where a woman was later diagnosed with the virus, but had none of the symptoms and transited and went to other municipalities and spread it. So it's very dangerous. So evidently, it's not only a human-to-human transmission, but there's another vector, and scientists don't know where that is yet. But I want to warn people, and it's going to come our way, I'm sure. This is the pandemic that we're looking at that's concurrent with the global economic collapse that we've been seeing for so long. Okay, I haven't been to a doctor in 22 years. Okay, I take care of myself. I've had some very serious things, but I've taken care of them, short of broken bones. I had full-blown pneumonia a number of years ago, and I mean full-blown pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
But I used remote viewing to take a look at this while I could still sit and move my hands. And come to find out that I was looking at something that other people already knew about. That's the beauty of the Internet. Wonderful tool. This is what you do, and since this is a killer, this virus is a killer, this cure that I'm going to talk to you about, it can kill virtually any respiratory disease, any respiratory virus. It kills it. It drops it in its tracks after about 6 days of use, and it may save your life or the lives of your loved ones, too. It's oregano oil. You take a one-gallon jug of water, anything you buy in the store or whatever, a plastic bottle of water, put 20 drops of oil of oregano in that water, cap the bottle, shake it. Don't try to drink this stuff with the oil on the top. It's nasty enough already.
Right.
Shake that. And every time you drink water over the next several days, drink only that water, only that. It kills everything is gone. There's no side effects, and it kills everything that's in your respiratory tract. It's a wonder drug.
Interesting. Okay, now this pandemic possibility, was it concocted in a laboratory, or is this natural?
It's natural. It's natural. Remember, this idea of consciousness, it extends in a single mind, this field that Rupert Sheldrake talks about, this morphogenetic field, it's sort of an extension of consciousness. These microbes, they collaborate together because they want food. And in our case, it's birds and us. In the influenza A case, it's humans and animals, other animals and birds. And there's a collaboration that we've detected using our methodology, consciousness tools, that between these microbes, they actually collaborate in some way. And Rupert Sheldrake would understand this, I'm sure. In other words, there's an intelligence of a type that we're not familiar with.
No, not at all. Well, there's not much we can do other than try to build up our immunity then.
Build up your immunity and, worst case, you have some of that oil of oregano around because it knocked my pneumonia out in 6 days flat. No side effects, no lasting.
And you're right about the shaking up. You got to do that.
Yeah, I have to do it because you don't want to drink that with the oil floats on top of the water. You don't want it's nasty tasting enough. You don't want to hit it full bore.
Ed, you had mentioned that you're, still looking for, missing children and people. How widespread is that? I mean, children and people who simply just vanish.
It's an epidemic, It's an epidemic. It's the way I look at it, I just do it for personal reasons, for my soul, because I don't view my life as just, years down here. And I think that I get some brownie points at my next duty station, sort of that kind of thing. But it's epidemic. It's epidemic. In fact, my case, the one I'm going on the road on Friday, is Patrick Carnes, was a former truck driver. He's a big billboard on Route 80 in Nevada about this guy, a missing person. And I'd like to bring closure to that case. I can't talk much more about it, but I'd like to do that on Friday or Saturday.
Anything new to the Natalie Holloway case after you pinpointed where she might have been, but nobody ever went to look?
Sir, we that's way too old, and she's gone. So I told you I had a man on the ground, on the underwater,
right,
actually, on that case. No, we're not doing any more work on that case. We have several others that are very sensitive. In fact, we have one child that's alive, and there are many of them that sold into sex slavery and those kind of things. And you do your best, sort of like the old story about the man walking down Cape Cod after a storm and seeing this boy throwing sand dollars back into the sea that had been blown and tossed ashore by the waves. There were millions all over the beach, and he told the boy, you know, son, it's not going to do any good. And the boy tosses one into the sea and says, it will for that one.
That's important.
That's kind of how I feel about this.
Very important. Ed, there's a comet that's heading toward Mars. Take the time, if you can, one day to do a little remote viewing there and see if it's going to hit it or not.
Okay, I'll try to do that. Look at that, but we're very much focused on this ISON committee, this ISON society's discovery. It's very, very scary.
I hear Hollywood's jumping aboard the Kill Shot too. What's going on there?
Yes, actually, I'm going to co-produce Smokewood Entertainment, the one that produced the movie Precious. They're actually going to do a Kill Shot movie, and partially based upon my life and work. And screenplay is being written now.
How far out do you remote view in terms of time? Years?
Well, we don't do it that way. We don't look, generally speaking, that's still in the research stage. In fact, it's being researched right now at calendrical dates. But what we look at is next events of a certain type of pandemics or whatever, pandemics, catastrophes. Cataclysms. We look at events there that would, where we could save people's lives. And so when we find an event, then we try to bracket it in time. I personally have no interest any longer. My team members do in looking past 2014. To be honest with you, I'll go into semi-retirement if I'm still alive after that. But of course, all the professionals that I've trained. They're like me. They're looking ahead. We should probably put some of them on your show one day because they're my proteges.
Yeah, how long they've been with you now?
Oh, years and years, and they're my proteges, and my I'm very proud of them. I'm very proud of them, and they've taken remote viewing and gone off in their own specialized areas, just like I did with the location problems.
Mm-hmm.
And you should talk to some of them. They're young. They're dynamic. Very well trained, very, very cautious in their work.
Ed Dames of the future. That's who they are, I guess.
Well, no, they're their own people. They're their own people.
What were they like when they came to you? Did they have any abilities?
No. They were just like me. Some of them a little bit, but it doesn't matter. The skill can be trained by anyone. It's just how much you want to commit, how much time and energy you want to commit to it. But they were like me. They were a little bit anticipative and a little scared, but I took care of that.
We lost the father of remote viewing, Ed, as you know.
We did.
Ingo Swann.
Yeah, we did.
Can't go on forever.
No. Everything has a beginning and an end. Empires, lives, you name it, countries, it has a beginning and an end.
Do you have any comment on this Boston bombing situation through the eyes of a remote viewer?
Well, the way we would look, what we would do in a case like that is we would ignore all of. I don't watch TV. I haven't watched TV since I was 16. That's a long time ago. But I'm quite familiar. I'm on the internet quite a bit in my work. I'm quite familiar with what the media has put out there. But as you know, in our work, we it's just the facts, ma'am. So the way I would handle that, if that were my project and I had to assign my team to look into it, I would first want a photo of the explosions, and we've got that. So I would take one of the explosions and start from there. We would take that particular event and backtrack it and recreate all the events behind it, its natural history and all that kind of thing. We would look at just the explosion just prior to the device itself, who or what was carrying the device, or where it was, where was the device fabricated, and by whom, and those kinds of things. And then we would look at the other explosion, put those pieces together as well. Then we would look at the personalities involved. Were there support teams behind the scenes? Were there and those kinds of things?
Well,
it's a very systematic approach.
Would you be able to pinpoint people, individuals, much like they did on the videotape?
The way it would occur in our work is once we establish a person connected with the device. Let's say a person detonated the device with a cell phone or a radio. Then we would focus on that person, and the way we would identify the person would be to look at his or her primary residence, their primary workplace if they have one, and those kinds of things, and then put the pieces together that way. We'd have to actually look at the residence, at the street number, house numbers or apartment numbers, and then find out who lived there, because we can't easily pull names out of the matrix. It's difficult for us to do. So we'd have to do it that way.
What about Iran? What's the latest there through a remote viewer?
Well, we haven't been focusing a lot on Iran because of the Korean situation, and we're capacity constrained. I only have so many resources, and so I've got to pick and choose carefully, and our focus has not been on Iran. That situation we can't affect anyway, because no matter what we would say or do vis-a-vis Iran, just like what happened to me when I briefed Vice President of the United States, Dan Quayle, at the time, on whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction in Kuwait City, the Allies went in anyway, saying that there were. So we feel that we would be ineffective no matter how much intelligence we provided to my country vis-a-vis Iran, that whatever is going to happen is going to happen anyway.
Tell me how important remote viewing is to an individual in their day-to-day life.
Well, my day-to-day life, where it is my life, it's pretty important. But for others, in order to, look up ahead at your own life to see if there are dangers or threats. For instance, should I go to Boston today or not? That kind of thing, or to look at cures for health problems. That's very, very common in my work. Individuals who are trained in remote viewing, who learn this via my DVD sets or in person, they use it for health reasons. They use it for investment as well, too. Most, I'd say about a good 60-70% of my students are interested in investments, whereas the optimum investment at the time. And there can be some real surprises there, too, because it's direct knowledge. Your unconscious goes right into this global mind, and it pops down with the answer when you go through these protocols.
Some people ever use it for personal gain in terms of stock markets and lottery numbers and things
that? Of course, I do. I'm going out on the road again next week to look at concentrations of silver and gold ore, heavy concentrations of silver and gold ore, and I used them. I looked at my optimum investment, and that's what it turned out to be. I was wondering why it wouldn't be coins or treasures or something else like that, but then I did that research, and I realized why my unconscious said, no, don't do coins, because coins can be counterfeited, and they have aesthetic value, and some of them are tungsten loaded or whatever. Don't do treasures, because treasures are, for instance, a stagecoach robbery. Black Bart takes a strong box and sticks it somewhere. Well, most places today are private property, and Wells Fargo would still own the strong box, so you can't do that. And for any other treasure or antiquity, if in the United States, it's different than Britain. Britain has a very nice system. In the United States, if you're on public land and you stumble across a treasure, gold or silver or Spanish, the conquistadors, silver or something like that, it's a felony. It's a felony if you remove it. Anything that's older than 6 months that's of historic value on public land, if you touch it, it's a felony.
It's not finders keepers, huh?
No. It's different in England, and it has a very, very equitable system. But that's why my unconscious knew all that. it's the master problem solver set and said, go here. Here's the silver concentration. Here's the gold concentration. Use this. So I used it as that was my optimum investment. I don't want to be an economic slave.
Well, hey, if it works for you, it's a great tool, isn't it?
It's one of the most powerful tools I know. I'm still in awe of this. I've been in this business more than 30 years. I'm still in awe of what it can do in terms of understanding the universe, understanding our own unconscious, and in terms of personal happiness.
And isn't it true that you have to basically, in remote viewing, take the first thought? Because if you keep thinking about it, you're going to generally pick up the wrong things?
Well, there's no thinking allowed during the thinking comes in terms of setting up the problem, the search term, the matrix search term. Then that's a very elaborate process. It's just like an internet search term. It has to be right or you get junk in, junk out. And then the thinking comes again in the third part of the process, which is an analysis. We have to analyze our work, and that requires thinking. But during the process itself, there is no thinking allowed. It's like playing a piano and reading sheet music. The data is coming in using the protocols that we use. And it's just very strict. You have a pen and paper, and the protocols are taught. And you're recreating, just like recreating pieces of a jigsaw puzzle, you're pulling the pieces out of the matrix, out of the collective consciousness. You're pulling that out and putting them together again in the form of paper, word descriptors, and sketches. But when you do that, you're taught not to think, which can be very frustrating for a new student.
The solar flares from the sun, not the kill shot, but the solar flares, how much of a problem can they be?
They do not affect us. And some people say that a sidereal time is the best time to remote view, is this, that, and the other thing. In fact, if my pros ever use excuses like that, dude, they're fired. Fired and they're out the door. There's no excuses. If you've got a remote view, some you do it whatever time of the day, whether the solar flares are active or not. And it has not seemed to affect us at all.
Not in the least, huh?
Well, I don't know about not in the least, because I haven't worked with EEG's equipment on my head and correlated solar activity with remote viewing times, and that would take a long time. Many months, perhaps years, to establish correlation. So I'm not in a position to know, George.
And do you remote viewers have precognitive dreams?
No more or less than other people. However, for people who have come to my workshops in the past and who I've trained and myself, if you're not a dreamer, if you do not dream at night. No REM dreaming and all this. The first day of remote viewing training is the last day that will ever happen. You'll start dreaming. Learning this opens doors and portals to what we call the matrix, the global mind.
And it's critical to dream that way, isn't it?
No, it's not. You can still be a super remote viewer and not dream, but it does, for people who do not dream, previously, without training, they start very quickly.
And you must have a pad and pen when you remote view?
Yes, because you have to record what's coming in. Otherwise, because to remember something requires thinking, and you're not allowed to think. So you have to be able to record what is coming in to your conscious awareness at the moment and then move on. The music cannot stop. You've got to keep moving. So if you didn't have a pen and paper and you were just remote viewing a topic, then by the time 45 minutes was over, you'd only have a few pieces of the puzzle, because it requires thinking to remember, and we are not allowed to think.
Ed, we're coming back to take phone calls with you in the final hour here on Coast to Coast AM.